KPBS has partnered with StoryCorps for the One Small Step program. We invite you to sign up to have a conversation with a person that may have different views, so you may talk, not about politics, but to understand each other better. Sign up at kpbs.org/onesmallstep.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Wednesday, February 11th. There's a new option for fresh food in Imperial Beach. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Federal law enforcement agents in California are still allowed to cover their faces after a federal judge's ruling this week. Judge Christina Snyder says the recent state law banning masks unfairly targeted federal agents by exempting state law enforcement. The judge, however, did approve a measure requiring federal agents to have their IDs out with their agency and badge number clearly present and visible. The recent ruling could have national implications as states work to figure out how to engage with federal agents who are enforcing the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. One of the longest-serving Republicans in San Diego County is now a Democrat. Gary Kendrick's been an El Cajon City Councilman since 2002. San Diego's Democratic Party said Kendrick once considered himself to be a lifelong Republican, winning his last election by securing 85% of votes. However, Kendrick now says today's Republican Party is no longer grounded in the economic or personal well-being of the people he swore an oath to serve. Kendrick added that moments of consequence call for clarity and action and says he is formally renouncing the Republican Party. Gary Kendrick will now run as a Democrat this upcoming November. Housing affordability showed slight improvement at the end of last year in San Diego County and California as a whole. The California Association of Realtors found 15% of San Diego County households could afford to purchase a median-priced home in the fourth quarter of 2025. That's a slight jump up from just 12% in 2024. The Realtors Association credits this trend to a cooling in market competition, which lowers borrowing costs, ultimately allowing for more Californians to qualify for a mortgage. Another contributing factor to the decline, interest rates dropping to their lowest level since 2022. The average monthly San Diego County home payment, according to the California Association of Realtors, was a little more than $6,000. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
San Diego County is known for being one of America's most expensive regions. Locals are feeling the squeeze and looking for solutions. KPBS's new series, Price of San Diego, delves into the rising cost of groceries, childcare, car insurance, and even our beloved California burrito. You won't want to miss this ongoing series live now at kpbs.org/priceofsandiego.
The first community-owned grocery store in San Diego's South Bay is now open. Reporter Jacob Ayer says some residents in Imperial Beach are excited they no longer have to travel outside of their city for what they say are nutritious food options.
After a decade of waiting, the shelves and aisles are full, and customers are shopping at Imperial Beach's Suncoast Market Co-op. It's bringing more food options to the community, which lacks a full-service grocery store. Kim Rivero-Frank is board president with the market. She says the movement for the co-op was born after Trader Joe's and Sprouts said they wouldn't expand to Imperial Beach.
We didn't have a lot of access to, really fresh, quality produce, healthy prepared foods. So we have created a grocery store for our community that we like to say it's by the people and for the people.
Rivero-Frank says many residents used to drive out of town to buy groceries. Suncoast Market sells local and organic products, bulk bin items, and food from hot and cold bars. Jacob Ayer, KPBS News.
For the first time ever, San Diego County is closing its wait list for Section 8 housing vouchers. Reporter Andrew Bowen says federal funding for this type of housing assistance has been stagnant in recent years.
The county and city of San Diego have separate agencies that distribute housing vouchers, which help low-income families afford rent. Both agencies announced recently their voucher waitlists will be closing in order to better serve the applicants already in the queue. Nick Martinez of the county's Housing and Community Development Services says someone selected today would have spent an average of 18 years waiting for a voucher.
We're not able to select people from the waitlist. We haven't selected from the waitlist since 2022. So the limited funding that we receive from HUD allows us to support the families that are already on the program, but doesn't allow us to add new families to the program.
The county's housing voucher waitlist officially closes on February 20th. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
A group of people who live in their RVs have formed a new union to press their demands with the city of San Diego. They say San Diego police indiscriminately ticket their RVs. Reporter John Carroll was at a protest the group held outside San Diego City Hall yesterday.
They put housing even farther out of reach.
Members of the newly formed San Diego RV Residents Union made their demands loud and clear in Civic Center Plaza. They say the city is violating terms of a 2024 settlement when it comes to ticketing their RVs. Tickets, they say, run around $170 apiece. Union member Francis Yasmin Motiwala says that's unaffordable for people living in their RVs.
These are hardworking San Diegans who are trying to put food into their kids' bellies, just like all of us. And right now, they're getting penalized nightly, sometimes twice in the same night. They've gotten ticketed. And all the money that they're making trying to survive is then going into these parking tickets.
The city says it has created safe spaces to park RVs overnight and that it has a responsibility to insist people avail themselves of resources meant to get them into permanent housing. They say they'll continue to enforce parking ordinances. John Carroll, KPBS News.
Last year, the winner of America's Got Talent was Chula Vista-born Jessica Sanchez. Almost 20 years ago, she was on the very first season of the show as an 11-year-old. Reporter Corey Suzuki says her return is a comeback story rooted in hometown pride.
Jessica Sanchez's earliest performances probably aren't the ones you're thinking of.
I did like a Seafood City competition, I think in National City. I even did like a mini concert at Eastlake Middle School and a couple other ones. I definitely made my rounds around San Diego.
Jessica is from the South Bay. She grew up going to these places, Eastlake Middle School in Chula Vista, and Seafood City, the Filipino supermarket in National City. Jessica is the daughter of Filipino and Mexican-American parents. And she grew up especially close to her Filipino roots.
For Filipinos, from cradle to grave, you will always be exposed to music.
That's Ana Maria Labal Cabato. She's the executive director of PISACAT, San Diego's oldest Philippine performing arts organization. She's describing something she's heard other cultural arts experts say. Ana says many Filipino kids grow up surrounded by music.
And especially with the development of the karaoke machine, all the kids were taught to sing.
Jessica didn't always like being the center of attention. Sometimes she stared at the floor while she performed so she wouldn't have to look at anyone. But she loved to sing. When she was 11, Jessica made it onto the very first season of America's Got Talent. This fire's burning steam. What would happen if she didn't make it very far, but she resolved to keep trying. She recorded YouTube covers from her childhood bedroom and auditioned for other competitions. At 16, her work paid off. Jessica made it onto another show, American Idol. She captivated her hometown and ended up finishing second to Philip Phillips.
It was beautiful, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
You're so talented. God bless you.
It was her breakout moment. Jessica left home and moved to Los Angeles with a record deal. In 2013, she released her first album. But Los Angeles was a little overwhelming. A lot of people around Jessica had their own ideas about what she should sing and how she should dress, about who she should be.
I remember guys, managers or like producers and stuff like that, that would tell me like, oh, like, you know, we could see you being like this sexy Asian girl, you know, and I'm just like, this is really weird that you're like trying to put me in this like box.
Ana says young artists, young women of color especially, often face these pressures.
Sometimes as a young person, you don't know how to process what's being thrown at you. So you just do what you're asked to do.
To Jessica, it felt like the industry was trying to make her into someone else, even though she was still trying to figure out who she was.
I started really doubting myself. I really want to do this. I love music and I want to become a performer and a singer, but I don't know if I can do that.
Jessica decided to take a step back from everything. She went home to do a show in National City. Back in her hometown, Jessica was able to slow down. She met her now husband, found a deeper relationship with Christianity, and continued to reflect on her purpose as an artist. The years went by. Jessica and her husband moved to Houston. She started thinking about whether it might be time to move on from music altogether. Then she heard the news. America's Got Talent was back for its 20th season, almost 2 decades after she had first appeared on the show. It felt like a sign. Around the same time, Jessica learned she was pregnant.
There was this sense of peace of like, yeah, I'm going to be a mom now, and this is a new season in my life. This is a new thing. And I talked to God about it, and I was like, if this is what he wants, he'll make it happen. If not, then it won't happen.
Jessica blew through the audition. She advanced through quarterfinals and semifinals. In September, she reached the final round.
I was kind of like scrambling of like, okay, how am I going to make this? My own rendition instead of it sound like karaoke, you know? I poured out all of my emotions and like a mix of like grit, but also gentleness. So I'm going to love you every night like it's the last night,
like it's the last night. The world was back home, Anna was watching.
You can even hear it in her voice. It was so soulful. And it's like you could sense that she knew who she was now.
Jessica credits San Diego for giving her the confidence to come back. Even away in LA or Houston, she says she still carries that sense of support and multicultural pride. One day, she says, she'll come back for good. Kori Suzuki, KPBS News.
To hear more of Jessica's story, you can listen to The Finest at kpbs.org. Henrik Ibsen's play, Hedda Gabler, sparked controversy in 1891 for creating a female character who defied 19th century norms and challenged societal expectations for women. Over the weekend, the Old Globe Theater opened its newly commissioned translation of the play, which will run until March 15th. Arts reporter Beth Accomando brings us this preview.
Hedda Gabler may be 135 years old, but she's still turning heads. Henrik Ibsen's play has inspired countless theater productions, as well as dozens of TV and movie adaptations. Just last year, Tessa Thompson starred as the Mercurial title character.
Sometimes I can't help myself. I just do things all of a sudden on a whim. I don't know why.
It's kind of the female Hamlet in many ways, the contemporary female Hamlet.
Barry Edelstein is directing Katie Holmes as Hedda Gabler at the Old Globe. It's a period play, but one that has not lost its bite.
It's very much a feminist play about a woman whose options are circumscribed in a world of men and the behaviors she is then driven to in order to survive. The critique of the patriarchy is very much still there, but it resonates in a larger context now about a free spirit, a woman of imagination, a woman of wit and irony, a woman of desires for greatness being put in a box by a world that isn't really comfortable with that.
I think that female rage resonates time and time again, right?
Holmes says Hedda, in all her complexity, resonates today.
There's pieces of her experience on that stage, I think, that are very relatable emotionally. Obviously, there's a lot of big metaphors and a lot of actions that seem demonic. But what we've tried to do is give perspective on her perspective.
Helping provide that perspective is playwright Erin Cressida Wilson, who was commissioned to create a new translation of the play. In tackling Ibsen's text, she noticed that in some ways, little has changed since the 1890s.
We think that we've come so far as women, and we have, but we all know that we also have not. I think that we all relate to Hedda Gabler. Part of it is that she has complex desires, and we relate to that. And we relate also to the world saying, you're not supposed to be that complex. So that's why I call it the kaleidoscope of Hedda. And we're all so hard to pin down, but why should we be pinned down?
Yeah, exactly. She's not one thing.
Holmes appreciates how Wilson has adapted the play.
Aaron has this way of getting to the heart of things, and in a very direct way, but it's still subtle and gives us room to play. She really brings this character more off the page and more present to today's world.
Edelstein adds that Ibsen is known as the father of modern theater.
He was the first writer to bring psychological realism onto the stage, recognizable people that are not kings and queens, but just regular folks dealing with regular problems, people who are struggling, people who are difficult, people who change their minds, people who are trying to figure out their place in the bigger world. And Hedda Gabler is one of his masterpieces.
Wilson agrees.
I mean, he's really good. That's it. He's deep, he's psychological, he's funny. He lasts through time, through decades, through centuries. And he's entertaining while being very, very cruel and hard.
Ibsen is really willing to have characters say to each other what they really mean. There's no politeness, there's no sheen of politeness about it. And I'm really enjoying the kind of bluntness of it and the frankness of it and the in-your-face kind of nature of it. It's fun. It's exhilarating.
And I just tried to mine that aspect of Ibsen, who was my collaborator. I mean, I got to work with him, which is such a blessing.
You can see the fruits of that collaboration in the latest production of Hedda Gabler at the Globe. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Tijuana and San Diego borderlands are brimming with captivating stories of people whose lives are shaped by the connection between Mexico and the U.S. On the Port of Entry podcast, we delve into those stories. Listen to Port of Entry wherever you get your podcasts.